Good morning, dear devotees.
Good morning.
Thank you for assembling under the tent on this rainy morning here at New Govardhan for the continuation of our seminar on the Shikshastakam prayers. By good fortune only and by blessings, children should be quiet. It's hard to concentrate. We are reading the third verse of the Shikshastakam prayers. Trinadapi Sinichana Torapi Shahishnana Amanina Manadina Kirtaniya Sadahadi. This verse very easily flows off the tongues of Gaudiya Vaishnava devotees, but it is central to our teachings, which state that one should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. I was fortunate many years ago to be present at a class given by His Holiness, His Divine Grace, Srila Gaur Govinda Maharaj. I believe that Gaur Govinda Maharaj also preached here in Australia. Perhaps even some of his disciples are here. Very advanced devotee. As often happens, his glories were only really understood after his departure. But I often listen to his lectures on Krishna consciousness. This class he gave was in Budapest, Hungary. Srimaram Maharaj picked up on Gaur Govinda Maharaj quite early. And he brought him to Hungary and he had him travel and preach there quite often. And at one class, I remember, he was actually speaking from Chaitanya Charitamrita, from Adi Lila, chapter 17, where this verse, Trinadapi Sinichana, appears. Interestingly enough, it appears several times in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, not just in the Anti Lila, as we quoted the other day, but several times. So essential to our teachings is this instruction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And my memory fails me as I get older, but I remember very clearly Maharaj began his class, you know, actually his lips were trembling, and he was saying, this is the most important verse of Shikshastakam. That just entered into my heart. Humility is a virtue highly esteemed in any spiritual tradition. So if it's so important, how do we acquire this quality of humility? Well, it's the natural result of practicing devotional service, which in essence brings us closer to God. The word religion comes from the word reglio, which means to reconnect with the Supreme Absolute Truth, with God. Reglio means to connect with God. Like the people will be surprised, many of people who are practicing yoga now in society, but yoga has the same meaning, to connect with the Absolute, to connect with God. Reglio and yoga have the same meaning. So the natural result of practicing yoga, of practicing devotional service of God, is it brings you closer day by day, step by step, as we said the other day, small increments to our beloved Lord Krishna. So that makes you humble. Why? It's just like if you're out hiking in the woods and you come up, you know, you hike right up to the face of a great mountain, what happened? You're in awe. You're looking up. Wow. You're in awe of this great mountain and you feel very small, isn't it? Sometimes in nature you're humbled. In the face of something, you come up in front of something great, you naturally become humbled. I remember with my good friend Bimal Prasad and Alalanath. A couple of times we went to Nepal and we We wanted to go to the Kali Gandaki, where they have the Shalagram Shilas. We want to go to the source, get the Shalagrams. But to do that, you have to go to Kathmandu, then you drive to Pokhara, and from Pokhara, you take a plane from Pokhara up to the Tibetan Plateau, because the Gandaki River flows very high. It's like a moonscape. There's no green, there's no trees, there's no plants. It's the Tibetan Plateau. So you fly from Pokhara. Literally, you fly like this, and then you land on the plateau. And there's the Annapurna Mountain and another mountain. And as you're going up, you've got these two mountains on either side. There's no, like, you know, when you fly out of Brisbane to Sydney, you see all the landscape. And if you look out the window, there's one mountain on this side and one mountain on, and you're going up, 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 and, like, then you land. And you have to land before 11 o'clock in the morning because there's this powerful wind. Every day at 11 o'clock, this wind comes off the plateau. We were out collecting Shalagram Shilas, you know, this is going ahead a little bit. And that wind came up and knocked us off our feet. Actually, flying up between these two mountains, we were a little late. We got up about 11:05. We took a little gamble there. And sure enough, that wind came and boom, and knocked our plane, and our plane started spinning like this. Like you're you go to the theme park and you get on the roller coasters. This was the real deal. And our plane was going, and the pilot, very experienced, he pulled out maybe 100 feet from the bottom. That's like a millimeter second before you, or a second before you crash into the ground. He was white. He flew back to Pokhara and he was shaking, out of the plane, shaking. So he said, "That's it for the day." I said, "Hey, we have to go to Kagbeni and Muktinath." He said, "No way, I'm gonna." I said, "Look, let's just look and see, go back into the, you know, they have their place and the temperature and the weather, and we'll see if it receded." It did. It receded about 45 minutes later. It kind of, "Let's get back in the plane." He said, "Are you nuts?" I said, "Yeah." And Prabhupada said, "Every devotee who joins this movement is a little crazy. You have to be a little crazy to join this movement." We actually flew back up, and we landed. Obviously, I'm still here. So, but aside from that fearful experience, my impression was how small I was, going the size of two mountains. You know, I felt so small. It makes you humble. So in the same way, God is great and we are very small. So one who actually comes in the presence of God, naturally that person will be humble, because God is so great and we're very small. So one sign that one is a God-realized soul is not that he's very proud and arrogant and all the attention on himself. No, the sign that one is actually advanced is very meek and humble, because he's seen the greatest of the great. Allah Akbar Humdula. There is no God. Allah means the great one. Allah means the great one. So naturally you meet some big personality, you're always like this. So if you've actually come in the presence of God, just because you've seen God, you're naturally going to be. So if we want to find someone who can take us to God, we should look for this quality of humility. Bhaktisananda Saraswati said, "The search should not be for God, necessarily. Of course, that's the goal. But the search should be for one who can take me to God." So how do I find that person? Well, there's a list of so many qualities of a devotee in our scriptures. And here's one. That person, you may have a hard time finding him. You may have a very hard time finding him, because he'll be very humble and he won't be present. He wouldn't like to be on the top seat. So, and there are many examples. There's precept, there's philosophy, and there's example. Example and precept. So we need the precept, we need the philosophy, but we need someone to show us the way. We need examples to inspire us. Yes, that person has achieved it, I can also achieve it. We need examples. So in our tradition, there's so many examples of humility. Devotees who have been, they're great devotees, But if we study their actions, they're very humble. And the first humble soul that comes to our mind is our beloved Srila Prabhupada. I've mentioned many times in my discourses that, you know, when I had the good fortune to associate with Prabhupada and he was glorified, his immediate reaction would be to bow his head. No, no. He'd always say, the credit is not mine, it's just my Guru Maharaj. That, for me, that just increased my faith in Prabhupada. And one time in Stockholm, just after he'd given a lecture, Prabhupada was challenged by an angry man who yelled out. He stood up and he yelled out, "You think you're a first-class man," he said to Prabhupada, "because you're sitting on an elevated seat and people are bowing down to you, left, right, and center," he said like that. He screamed at Prabhupada. And Prabhupada very softly replied into the microphone, "Actually, I'm a fifth-class man, because I'm the servant of everyone." And Prabhupada's humility immediately disarmed that person, who stayed and took prasadam and chanted and danced in the kirtan. Prabhupada's humility disarmed him. Lord Chaitanya was God himself, but he appeared in the role of a devotee to show us the process of devotional service in this age. He often took a very humble position as well. He took a humble position before Prakasananda Saraswati. He took a humble position before Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He let Sarvabhauma preach to him for 7 days. And Sarvabhauma said, "Are you listening?" He said, "Sort of, because what you're saying is all nonsense." But that's very humble, to sit and listen for 7 days. And then he preached to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And after Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya realized who he was sitting next to, he himself, Sarvabhauma, offered 100 beautiful shlokas glorifying the personality of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu also showed humility when he accepted the worthless criticism of Ramchandra Puri and gave up eating as a result. Murari Gupta, Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami were so humble that they actually embarrassed Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who said that their humility as devotees was breaking his heart. This quality of humility endeared them to Mahaprabhu. He said to Murari Gupta, he said to Sanatana, Rupa, "Your humility is breaking my heart." And Haridas Thakur, another example for us to follow, he was so humble that he begged forgiveness for the people who were beating him. So we have many examples of humility, and therefore we must strive for it. But we know it's not easy to become humble, because humility is not something that's, you know, encouraged in modern society. You have to be a self-made man. Independent lady, you know, get ahead, be number one. You know, it's not something that's there in modern society. So, you know, we're most of us, not these wonderful children, but, you know, we come so we're carrying a lot of baggage with us. So, you know, how to develop that humility? Well, it's not easy, because to greater or lesser degrees, we're all infected by the opposite quality of humility, which is pride. Like night is the opposite of day. Like black is the opposite of white. Like no is the opposite of yes. So pride is the opposite of humility. Everything's laid out very clearly in Krishna consciousness. In other words, to become truly humble, we have to conquer pride. So what is the dictionary definition of pride? We've heard what is the definition of humility. So in the dictionaries, pride's described like this, and you can see if you'd like to have this quality. Arrogance, conceit, smugness. That was Webster's dictionary. Smugness, Prabhu, you're very smug. Or I'm smug for calling you smug. Self-importance, egotism, vanity. Who would like to have those qualities? Who would like to have the poison of material life injecting? No. So this pride, which, you know, comes when you get a body and you're successful in life and, you know, this and that. And this is an obstacle in the path of pure devotion. And we'd be very determined to get rid of pride and develop humility. How determined? I'm trying to think of an analogy. How determined we have to be in Krishna consciousness. How focused we have to be. How much we have to desire to develop good qualities. Not just, you know, procrastinate, you know, do all this business later in Krishna consciousness. No, now is the time. Make hay while the sun shines. Now we have the opportunity to develop, so we have to be very determined. And I was trying to think of an example, and I remember the other day I was in India. We were in South India somewhere. And you know those green praying mantis? They're not actually dangerous, but they look really scary. They look like a praying mantis. Something like that. They're really nice little creatures. Like yesterday, Venugopal came to the house and he had this green frog on his shoulder. I was like, ah! No, they're really friendly here. They put it on my shoulder. Take a picture. I told him the last time I touched a frog was in the Amazon jungle and I got a disease and my whole face became purple. Like, can you take them off my shoulder? So, we were somewhere and there was a teenage girl, a beautiful young girl, very shy, a girl maybe 13 or 14, and she was sitting with her parents, some event, and this praying mantis, and it landed on her knee. When that girl, she freaked out. She started screaming and she was, you know, running and twirling around to get him off and rolling on the ground, you know. She was so determined to get rid of that praying mantis, I was thinking, yes, that's how determined I have to be to get rid of all my bad qualities. You know, that determined. So this desire, this pride, this desire for name and fame, later on Mahaprabhu will become more specific. Na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim, kavicham, vada, kadisha, kamaye, mama janmini, janmini, shud, bhavata. I have no desire for material opulence, to enjoy the opposite sex, for subtle desires, name, fame, prestige, pride. No, I don't want anything. I don't even want liberty. I just want your devotional service. Like, it become more specific. So we have to recognize these things and get rid of them. Just like when you go to the doctor and you have a disease, you're hoping he'll pinpoint it. One of the great anxieties of being sick is not knowing what it is. You'll see this as you get older. Something will come, a lump will come, or a pain will come, and oh my God, what is it? Is it just that I ate too much and I got a big belly? Or is there some growth there? Half the anxiety is not knowing what it is. So the acharyas, you know, they're strong. They, again, sadhu means one who cuts, who points it out. The duty of the master is to point out the defects in the disciple and then give the medicine. But I found you can't actually point out defects in a disciple unless they're a little bit advanced, because the false ego comes out. You will be. So it's a sign of sincerity, a sign of advancement, sincerity, that you're willing to hear what is it that's keeping you from crying when you chant Hare Krishna. Actually, the goal is, you know, when we're chanting, we're calling out to Krishna, the love comes, we'll cry. So what's keeping me from crying? Offenses, holding on to bad habits, impurity, bad qualities. So, you know, it's the guru or our spiritual authorities or our friends. A friend in need is a friend indeed. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he spent more time, you know, they called it the chopping technique, some of his disciples, pointing out the faults rather than just, oh, you are very nice, devotee, I bless you. They were very great. Like, you go to the doctor, he says, nothing's wrong. You walk out of the office, hey, I got cheated. Paid $100, he just told me nothing's wrong. We want to know what's wrong. So pride is what's wrong. As humility is the greatest quality, pride is one of the greatest obstacles. And our acharyas have helped us to understand this in so many ways. It's like a crystal, you shine a light, then you get the colors coming out from so many directions. So there's, our acharyas have analyzed our bad qualities and our good qualities from all angles of vision. You just hear it constantly, and finally, duh, I get it. So everyone is infected. Until we cry, there's something still in the heart that has to come out. Raghunath Das Goswami, in his Manashiksha, another such an important treatise offered to the future Vaishnavas, he talks about this pride, this desire for name and fame. He says, as long as the impotent, untouchable woman of the desire for fame dances in my heart, why should pure love for Radha and Krishna ever touch me? O mind, continuously serve my spiritual master, the leader of those who are dear to the Lord. Then my master will quickly kick out that desire, that prostitute, and allow the pure love, the Braja Prem, of Radha and Krishna to manifest. So pride means, I think the boys can go over there. So, yeah. You boys can hear from the back. You're good boys, because you're sitting and listening, but you're boys. We'll give you some upshot later. Pride, well, many ways you could describe pride, but for us, pride means to take credit for any good qualities that we have, or for whatever service we've done. This is a practical way of seeing pride, the good qualities that are manifest, or the success we may have in Krishna consciousness. Actually, we can't claim to have those good qualities, and we can't claim success in our activities, because after all, we're just the instruments in the hands of the Lord. We're just the instrument. There's the person utilizing the instrument to achieve his goal. So we're just the instrument. The personalities, you know, who are successful in pushing forward this Krishna conscious movement are Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Srila Prabhupada, our spiritual preceptor, the disciple, things like that. We just consider ourselves the instrument. Tasmat tom utishte yasho labhasya jitva satun buksva rajam samridham. Therefore, get up and prepare to fight, Arjuna, Krishna says. After conquering your enemies, you will enjoy a flourishing kingdom. They are already put to death by my arrangement, and you, O Savyasachin, are but an instrument in the fight. So we, as devotees, we always remember that give credit where credit is due. Krishna se tamar, Krishna dite par, tamara sakati ache. Amita Kangala Krishna Krishna Boli Dayatava Pache Pache. Speaking to our spiritual preceptor, to our spiritual master. Krishna is yours, and you have the power to give him to me. I am poor and wretched, and simply running behind you shouting, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. To take credit for anything we have done is actually dangerous. Once there was a king, he was sitting on the throne giving darshan to his subjects. And vive le roi! Vive le roi! Long live the king! Long live the king! The people were saying. The king, this is his duty. He's ruling. He's the Lord's representative, Raj Rishi. Yes. And one little mosquito came along. Insignificant, wretched, bloodthirsty, blood-drinking mosquito. Dengue fever. Malaria. Zita. New disease they have. And so I said, and he landed on the knee of the king. He's looking around. From his angle of vision, everyone's glorifying him. He took it like that.
Viva la la!
He's going and he's raising his little hand. Yes, yes, come, come, more, more. I like this. Business, 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 business. And he became so excited in accepting all this praise from all the king's subjects that his stinger came out, went into the knee of the king, and the king went, finished the mosquito. Prabhupada told the story on several occasions. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he taught us, again, acharya means one who teaches by example. He taught us to give credit where credit is due. One time he was, there was a debate, and the debate was, who is better, the Brahmanas or the Vaishnavas? In the 30s, there are different things that happen in different epochs of different parts of the history of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. We have our particular duties to spread Krishna consciousness. We have our opposition. In Poland, we have the church. In Russia, we have the Russian Orthodox Church. We have politicians here. We have skinheads. You know, we all... In those days, the problems were that the Vaishnavas were not so accepted, and the Brahmanas, who had been around for such a long time and had that prestige, the Brahmanas are better than... No, Vaishnavas are better than... So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, let's have a debate. And all the Brahmanas came, and who represented the Vaishnavas? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So the Brahmanas spoke first, you know, Namo Brahmanyade Vaya Go. You see, it's in the scripture. It doesn't say Vaishnava. Of course, we say a Vaishnava automatically has the good qualities of a Brahmana. A Brahmana has good qualities. But sattva, but a devotee of the Lord, he's sudha sattva. He's one step above. He's out of the material nature. As Jesus said, to be in this world but not of this world. A Vaishnava's transcendental by dint of his service to the transcendent Lord. It's above. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati again took a very humble position. And when it came time for him to speak, he repeated the same verses and more. He was so literate, he had this ability. Whatever he read, he could remember it for the rest of his life. He learned English, because he was born in Bengali society, but for preaching purposes, he learned English. He took a dictionary and closed himself up in a room for 7 days and came out of that room speaking fluent English. And he could remember whatever he read from 5 years of age. He could repeat it verbatim in his 30s. Such an incredible personality, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So the Brahmins quoted verses, you know, establishing themselves, and we offer our respects to the Brahmanas and the cows who are very dear to Krishna, those who properly practice brahminical culture. But he went on for so many more verses, and they were going, oh, yes, yes, you see, you have seen the truth. And then he very carefully began to elaborate that those who become Vaishnavas, even if they come from the lower castes, who by dint of service and surrender develop a good quality, they can also become Brahmanas, as he quoted the verse by Sanatana Goswami, as bell metal can be changed into gold. What? Bell metal can be changed into gold by a little bit of a mystical process. But the yogis, they would drink mercury, and when the mercury would assimilate into their body, they would chant certain mantras, and then when they would pass urine, whatever they would pass urine on would turn to gold. So that mantra is there. I actually know that mantra. I learned that mantra from a Brahmana in, where was that? I think in Nepal, one sadhu we met. He knew the mantra. He said, I can teach you. You just take this mercury and drink it. I am Allah. We didn't have the mystic ability to absorb the... But it is possible. They're yogis. They have siddhis, mystic powers. So, but he uses this analogy, which means that it actually exists at some point. And it's still, I guess, the sadhu I knew. I didn't try. I didn't see him pass urine and turn things to gold. Maybe I should. I could have paid for the whole Polish tour for the next 100 years. But He gives this analogy that as bell metal can be changed into gold by a mystical breath, so a low-born, outcast person can become a pure devotee of the Lord by proper training and diksha. Initiation into that most glorious of all mantras, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, because of his Shastric erudition and his ability to convince others by his preaching, at the end of his discourse, all those brahmanas stood up, which is unusual, you know, in that culture, and gave him a round of a huge, resounding applause, it's described. A resounding applause. He defeated them with his own humility. They all stood up, hundreds of them, and bravo! Well, they weren't saying bravo. Sadhu! 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 And it, you know, this uproar, huge, hundreds, huge, sadhu, sadhu. He became very, he just showed even more humility. He bowed his head and then he went like this. And with that motion, the big crowd separated. He went like this. He gave an, and they all kind of went to the side. And then he pointed to the entrance of the auditorium. And there were all the chapals were, all the sandals, the dirty sandals were. There was his Guru Maharaj, Gorkhashordas Babaji, sitting, listening to his own disciple, shedding tears. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, he pointed and everyone looked at Gorkhashordas Babaji and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. It is not me. Whatever I'm saying is all by the mercy of my Guru Maharaj. And as soon as he said that, Gorkhashordas Babaji ran out of it. Give credit where credit is due. But just in case we forget, and the tendency of a conditioned soul is to forget, that's one of our weaknesses. We hear, we put into practice, and we forget. It's just an inherent weakness. Like in India, they use concrete that's really not very good quality, so inherently the building is weak and as soon as they crumble. So inherently is, you know, one of our cardinal sins, if you could say it's a Christian term, but it's very applicable. One of our cardinal sins is that original sin was we turned our face, Bahirmukha, we turned our face from Krishna. I want to be the big fish. I want to enjoy. Why you go? We don't realize how much pleasure there is in just being a servant. That's our constitutional position. That's where we're at. That's where we're most happy. Just at the lotus feet of, at the bottom of the pile, you know, servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. What's so good about it? You get a lot of dust in your head. You get a lot of mercy from the devotees. That's where we want to be. That's our safest position, is to be the servant of the servant of the servant. So, but sometimes we forget. Like the mosquito. It's such an insignificant creature. All of a sudden, you're thinking the king. So in the same way, when a devotee, for whatever reason, you know, sometimes there's weaknesses, sometimes there's fall downs. Prabhupada acknowledged that. He said, okay, you can fall down once. You know, material energy is very strong. You have desires that well up from the inner recesses of your heart. You get some bad association. It's Kali Yuga. I can forgive you. You can fall down two times. It's okay. Three times you... But if it's constant fall down, Prabhupada said, that means a lack of sincerity. So we shouldn't, you know, Prabhu had a fall down, kick him out. That's not our creed. We're preaching to people on the outside, quote unquote. We're so merciful. Can't we show the same mercy to our own brothers and sisters who may slip on the process? In Islam, they say, fall down eight times, pick yourself up nine times. So we have to be ready. The material energy is very, very powerful. One time Prabhupada said to one of my godbrothers, the problem with you is you're not afraid of Maya. because Maya is so strong. So if somebody, you know, if somebody gets wounded in the battle, you don't criticize them. You go and you tend to them. You heal the wound. Do whatever is necessary to get that person back on the battlefield. Of course, those who have fallen have to show some remorse and the desire to change. But if they do, we have to give them service again. We can't kick them out and not give them service, because it's service that purifies the soul. We are where we're at now. Who are we? Again, look at the picture. Look at your high school yearbook. Who are we? And where are we now? Because we've rendered some service. I can be understood, Krishna says, as I am, by devotional service. And when one is in full consciousness of such service, he can enter the kingdom of God. So service brings us to the movement, it keeps us in the movement, and delivers us. So those who are having trouble and are remorseful and want help, give them service. So potent. So there is a risk of sometimes, you know, making a mistake. To err is human. We're still humans. We're not pure devotees. So if one has a little pride there, then Krishna arranges to help curb the pride of his devotees. And we may think he'll just wave the magic wand. No. There's a saying, the hardest lessons are the ones best learned. So sometimes the devotee is not acting properly, and the Lord, he may use the le baton. He may use the le danda. He may teach us a hard lesson, because that's the only way we're going to learn. But the hardest lessons are the ones best learned. So whatever happens to the devotee, he should take it. This is Krishna's way of dealing with me. Now, why is Krishna doing this to me? Well, maybe because that's what you need, Baba. You can't hear good instruction. Everyone's trying to tell you, and you're doing this nonsense, the dun-da-dun-da-dun-da. And there's examples of how the Lord kindly deals with his devotees in this way. Once, after the Battle of Kurukshetra had been fought and won, and eventually Krishna had returned to the spiritual world, his mighty devotee, warrior, Arjuna, was escorting some cowherd girls from one village to the next, because the war was over, you know. So when the war is over, lots of times soldiers become security guys, and right? They entered the police force or whatever, you know. They were valiant on the battlefield. There was no fighting. So they become security. So Arjuna, one of the things he did is he would escort, you know, gopis, cowherd girls from one village to the next. And as he was going through this forest, some, you know, hoodlums, you know, we say in Hindi, dacoit. Some low-class guys in the forest, and, you know, they live in the forest, and they come out and they steal, and we're drink all night. They attacked Arjuna and this caravan of beautiful girls, and they beat up Arjuna. And they took the girls. They took the girls away. Previously, Arjuna, he could fight with, you know, all the Kaurava warriors. And suddenly, he can't. All the powers that were invested in him, you know, he had so many powers, they were gone. He had so many powers. His Gandiva bowl was given to him by Shiva. He received his chariot, his quiver, and his arrows from Agni. All of a sudden they weren't working. So the Lord giveth, and the Lord taketh away. His powers weren't working. And the acharyas, they comment that the Lord took these powers away. He became, you know, humbled because the Lord had detected a little pride in the heart of Arjuna previous to this incident. Of course, let us not think of it in any ill way of Arjuna, just like in the Bhagavad Gita, he falls into Maya, but it's not that a Nitya Siddha, fully realized pure devotee, can fall into Maya. But sometimes the Lord places his devotees in these situations so he could teach the little guys like you and me a lesson that, uwaga, watch out. But there's a nice, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary is very nice. He says that actually all these dacoits were expansions of Krishna. Because who can touch gopis? Gopis are the Lord's intimate servants. They actually have transcendental bodies, so a low-born person couldn't touch a gopi. So these dacoits, they were Krishna. What an incarnation there. Krishna appears in all species of life, even appears as a dacoit. And he captured the girls like that. So, but it was all to curb down the pride in our Arjuna's heart. So such lessons are there to teach us. Another nice example of humility. One of my favorite stories, actually. Again, demonstrated by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. It's called The Heckler. And I'd heard this story many times, and some time back, I met an old disciple of Prabhupada, and of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and I asked him about this story, and he confirmed it. He was there. The Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was, you know, in the early stages of his Gaudiya Math, he was traveling. That was the pioneer work, spreading the message around India. I think he had 50,000 disciples. He's going like a lion guru, preaching, followers, you know, Jai Gurudev. But at one point, when he was giving his discourses in public, there was one heckler. Like we're reading now how there's this, the American politics are going on, they're going to be electing a president. So the candidates, the Democrats and Republicans, they're going to these big halls and they're speaking. And because of freedom of speech, it's allowed that people can come in and disagree. Hey, I don't agree with that. What do you think about that? You know, and unless they get too much, they're allowed actually to challenge. If they get really offensive, then they're taken out. But it's, you know, so that's not part of our culture, that you challenge the Bhagavatam speaker. Of course, you can challenge, but in a proper way. The Prabhupada said, once you accept someone as your guru, there's no more challenging. Sir, yes, sir. You accept that person as a representative of Krishna, and he's speaking the absolute truth. So all the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they're listening very nicely, absorbing the wisdom from him. And this guy stands up, hey, you Bhaktisiddhanta! I don't want to repeat how he spoke. Who do you think you are? Like this man challenged Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, I'm a fifth class person. I'm serving all these people in the law. But this person didn't become humbled by whatever Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati did. Every lecture, I think it was for 4 or 5 months, he'd stand up and start criticizing him. You know, you think you're a sadhu. I saw you riding in a motor car. You had a coat like an Englishman. You're wearing leather shoes. You're associating with Mayavadis. I got that criticism recently on the internet. Oh, Indraduna Maharaj, he associates with Mayavadis. I thought that was a compliment. You know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went into the association of the Mayavadis to deliver them. We're supposed to deliver everybody, but not the Mayavadis? Not that you see Nitai go into a brothel and you're thinking he's going in there for some unjust reason. He's going in there to preach. So wherever we go, it's for the purpose of preaching. So why not the Mayavadis? Prabhupada, he spent time with Dr. Mishra in upstate New York in the beginning of his time in America. He couldn't even speak. Dr. Mishra was a Mayavadi. He wouldn't let Prabhupada speak about Krishna. You can just sing a little, Baba. The Baba would sing, melt people's hearts. And then when Dr. Mishra got sick, Prabhupada cooked for him for 4 months and brought him back to perfect health. 4 months, Prabhupada's cooking in the kitchen for a Mayavadi. Hey, you're associated! So I wrote back, thank you very much. So this heckling went on for a long, and the disciples, they would just want to kill this guy. And Bhaktisiddhanta, so he'd always say, let him speak. Why, Guru Maharaj? Let him speak. He was always like this. He tried to find so many faults, and Bhaktisiddhanta just blows. So it so happened that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was back from the preaching tour, and he went back to his place of residence in Mayapur. It's near the Yogapith. It's still there today. It's actually become a Gaudiya Math center. And he He was there, and if you've ever been there, his Samadhi Mandir is there now, but there's a house nearby where he lived. It has a nice veranda. So one morning after the tour was over, he's chanting on the veranda, walking back and forth, and his disciples, there was going to be a class later, so there's hundreds of disciples out on the lawn, you know, getting ready for the class. And one disciple runs in off the road, and he has a telegram, and he says, "Come on, everybody, come on," and they look up to the veranda where Bhakti Sadhana is. "Guru Maharaj, Guru Maharaj, I have some fantastic news for you! Woo!" "Yes, what is it?" "We have a telegram that heckler, that guy who was saying some unknown things about you, he died of a heart attack! Woo!" Everyone's, "Yeah, yeah!" And Bhakti Sadhana Saraswati, again, he bows his head. And literally in front of his disciples, he's crying. Hearing the news, this man had died. And one by one, the disciples, they look up and, you know, the mood totally changes from this euphoria to this, like, shock. You know, why is Guru Maharaj crying for the demise of someone who was just heckling him? And one of his prominent sannyasis says, "Guru Maharaj, why are you crying?" And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said, someone that his disciples never forget. He said, "I am crying. I am missing that man because he was teaching me humility." Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur ki. So that's not an easy lesson, is it? Oh, I'm reading about humility. I will chant. And all humility will go. I'll be very proud. Sometimes the hardest lessons are the ones best learned. So whatever life throws at you, it's not like in the material life, whatever happens to you is as a result of your previous pious and impious activities. But when you surrender to Krishna, Guru and Gauranga take control of your lives. And what happens to you is under their direction. It's sanctioned by them. So whether it's joyful or difficult or happy or tragic, there's some lesson to be learned. Like Krishna says to Yudhishthira in the 11th canto. This is a tough one. "My first mercy upon my devotee is I take everything away from that person so that fool knows he has no other recourse than my lotus feet." Of course, lessons are only given according to the ability of one to learn the lesson. You don't give a physics class to a 5-year-old. So don't worry. Don't walk out of class, "Wow, lightning's going to strike me." No. The spiritual master will never give an instruction to the disciple that he feels the disciple is not able to follow. It's a work in progress. Just like the beautiful paintings by Kamalakshi. We appreciate them all so much, but little do we know how much work, how much time, how much effort, how much devotion for Guru and Krishna went into those works. It's a work in progress. So for us to become what we want to become, we all have we should have a vision of ourselves. 1 year down the road, what we want to be like 1 year from now, what we want to be 5 years from now, what we want to be when, you know, the chariot comes to pick us up and take us home. What we want to be, and we have to make progress towards that goal. So important is this quality of developing this quality of humility that it's enshrined forever in these instructions of this third verse of the Shikshastra compared. Gurga Vinamarsa, the most important. And Kaviraj Goswami underlines that by saying you have to wear like a garland around your neck. So we're on guard, we're willing to embrace humility and on guard against anything that might allow pride to enter in my heart. Just like in the tradition amongst the monks where we were, I don't know where it was, maybe it was in Bhutan, but there's a tradition, the monks, they learn martial arts. Because in the old days, they lived in the mountains and the monasteries, and, you know, the king's forces couldn't come up and defend them. So if, you know, they were attacked, they had to defend themselves. So that's where a lot of these martial arts developed, from the monks. Wow. You did that without any weapons. They would defend themselves like this, these martial arts. So they became so expert that that if the enemy appeared even kilometers or miles away, they could detect. Their senses were so refined. And if they were attacked, they were immediately ready to defend themselves. It said that the teacher, at night, when the monks were sleeping, he would come with a big bamboo stick. And when they were sounding, he'd take that stick under their head. They had to hear the swish and wake up and catch the stick. That's how much they were on guard against their enemy.
Got it, Gurudev.
Or the next morning, what's that lump on your forehead? I'm not chanting around. Get it. So let us be on guard to serve anyone whom we see has humility, because again, devotional service is something that's imbibed from other devotees. And let us be on guard against ourselves to take credit for anything that we've done. And always remember this beautiful prayer of Shikshaskam, to remain meek and humble. But you can get, you know, it's like, well, wait a minute. You know, I've been a devotee for many months, I've been out for many years, I've been for many decades, and nothing's coming. So in that desperation, another technique is to beg for it. This is why people give to beggars, because they have nothing, and they need something, so they beg for it. Right? Prabhupada said, when you're in India, and people come and approach you as beggars, just don't be so inclined to give. But if someone's sitting very humbly and he's begging, sir, please, if you so desire, could you please give me some rupees? Then you give. Oh, but he's not shaved up Vaishnava. No, he's in a desperate condition. He's in the Dham. He has some faith in the Dham, in Krishna, Radha and Krishna. Sir, if it could so be, I'm begging you, please, could you? I love to do that. I'm infamous for giving 1,000 rupee notes to old widows in Vrindavan. Guru Maharaj, you just gave her 1,000 rupees. I said, you spent 1,000 rupees on a milkshake in Mullumbai. It's only like $10 or something. You know? So, but this is when someone is begging, you know, and they have nothing and they're begging, you're inclined to give. So these qualities, as the years go on, we look into our hearts, oh my God, I've only got a few years left. And I'm still contaminated and I don't have any good, really good qualities. You have to beg. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Bandham, Dasyam, Sakyam. Prayer. Prayer isn't just what they do in the church. Prayer is what any sincere devotee trying to approach the Lord. It's just a desperate appeal. And actually, that's how we're supposed to chant Hare Krishna, as beggars. We don't have bhakti. Time is, you know, there's not much time left. We have to beg for it. And that's the mood in which we chant. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. To learn this art of begging. I remember one time in Vrindavan, I learned this mood. I tried to imbibe it from Aindra Prabhu. He was, I don't know how long he was in Vrindavan at that time, but I remember one time he made a public appeal to all the devotees for mercy. And it was in this mood of begging for some mercy. So I thought I would read his words, which I wrote down at that time. Aindra Prabhu prayed before all the Vaishnavas at a public assembly at the Krishna Balaram Mandir in 1994. He said, "My dear Prabhus, I have one humble request. I am insignificant, unworthy, and desperate need of unconditional kripa of Guru and Krishna. I am hoping that one day I will be plunged into the nectarian ocean of Gaur Prem and Radha Krishna Prema. It is for this reason that I have come to the Krishna Balaram Mandir to assist in Sridhar Prabhupada's performance of 24-hour Sankirtan with the hope of at least getting the mercy of a few good Vaishnavas." or even some aspiring ones, he said. When you come to Vrindavan, if you happen to notice one lamenting Aindradas, struggling to get a decent kirtan going, then if you could at least come around and mercifully help him to cry, because he can't cry yet for Krishna, then I'll be ever grateful to you. Isn't that beautiful? Aindra Prabhu ki. So like this, whatever we're missing, whatever's not there, and time is of essence, then also employ this technique. Beg for mercy. Beg to become freed from whatever pride. Beg for this humility, the crescent jewel of all your good qualities. Who do you beg from? Narottam says, Hari Guru Vaishnava Bhagavata Gita. He said, you beg from Hari, the Lord. You beg from your spiritual preceptor. You beg from the Vaishnavas, and you beg from the Vaishnavas. What? Because he says Bhagavata Gita. Hari Guru Vaishnava Bhagavata Gita. He doesn't say Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavata means devotee. Two times. Just as we cannot approach the Lord without the mercy of our spiritual master, we cannot approach our spiritual master without the mercy of our brothers and God's sisters. It's in their association that we also capture the mood of loving service to Gurudev. We can't serve Krishna alone. It's very difficult. But we're missing, but that person has this quality, he has that quality, she has that quality, she has... And altogether we have so many wonderful Vaishnavas living in their association, congregational chanting of the holy names, the theme of Shikshastakam. In their association we can imbibe and become a complete Vaishnava in due course of time. So he says, Bhagavata, just as we approach Krishna through Guru, we approach our Guru in the loving association of our God brothers and God sisters. And that's why this festival is so wonderful. Because so many devotees, under the shelter of Srila Prabhupada and their initiating gurus, have come together. And if you look around in the kirtans, you just see so many wonderful Vaishnavas and Vaishnavis chanting, and then you appreciate their good qualities, and you can go around and beg for them. Prabhu, you have this quality. Can you tell me how you got it? Can you please share it with me? Can I do some service? Can I wash your clothes? Srila Kavasha, I believe Madharangi was supposed to wash my clothes while I was here. He stole the service. He said, no way. I haven't seen my Guru Maharaj in 2 years. I'm washing his clothes. And I'm going to iron my clothes. Look pretty good, right? Like this. So if you see some enthusiasm, good quality in your body, then you beg that duty. You teach me how to do that so I can be like you. Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita.